Undisclosed is supported this week by longtime friend of the show, Stamps.com. Listen in after the intro for how Stamps.com can help you fulfill your postage needs without ever having to go to the post office. Until then, enjoy.
We started the season by telling you what happened on the night of January 11th, 2000, in Rome, Georgia. Isaac Dawkins was driving home from classes at Floyd College on U.S. Route 27 when he was fatally shot. His white truck was seen on the opposite side of the road, having crashed into a thicket. Numerous witnesses saw his car and called 911. One of the folks who saw the crime scene as they drove in the opposite lane was Joey Watkins, who was eventually charged with his murder. From day one, Joey has always given the same story. About the time of the murder, he left his home in northwest Rome to go visit his current girlfriend, who lived south of Rome. About 10 minutes later, he passed the wreck site and saw Isaac's car in the woods, with ambulances and cops all around it, and then he passed it again 2 hours later on his way home. His story has never changed. We can't really say that about the state story, though. At Joey's trial for murdering Isaac, the state claimed that Joey himself shot Isaac, or had one of his friends shoot Isaac, or maybe he and one of his friends both shot at Isaac. They argued that maybe Joey had driven to Floyd College and was waiting for Isaac to leave before following him and shooting him, as both of their vehicles were going over 55 miles an hour on the highway. Or maybe Joey was late getting to Floyd College, where he was planning to ambush Isaac, but saw him driving in the opposite direction, did a U-turn, and followed him. They argued that maybe he followed him after running into him at a gas station. They knew it would be pretty tough for a civilian to shoot the driver of a speeding vehicle from another speeding vehicle while talking on a cell phone, of all things. So maybe Joey drove while his friend Mark free shot Isaac. Mark, after all, had been in the National Guard. Maybe it was Joey's friend Tim, or Josh, or Paul, or David that did the shooting. Or maybe Joey got Isaac to pull over on US 27 before he or his friend or friends shot him, and then pushed his truck through a low dipping median to the opposite side of the road. Maybe it was a premeditated murder, plotted meticulously days in advance. Or maybe Joey had run into Isaac by chance and fired a gun at him just to scare him, but the bullet accidentally hit Isaac instead. The state thought that maybe after Isaac was shot, that his truck continued to veer off to the left into the thicket next to the highway, or they thought maybe it veered off to the right. Or maybe Joey and a friend or friends pushed Isaac's truck across the median and left it there, hoping that it would explode and the fire would burn away all the evidence. Hi and welcome to episode 3 of Undisclosed, The State versus Joey Watkins. This week's episode is Helen of Rome. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and senior fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and I blog at splitthemoon.com.
I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney with the Volkov Law Group, and I blog at viewfromll2.com.
I'm Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
Now, you just heard some of the many ways the state eventually suggested the crime could have happened. All of this while, Joey's story has never changed. As we unravel the story of their investigation, the evidence the state claimed showed his guilt, and the evidence for Joey's innocence over the next 17 episodes, we have to begin where the state started, by establishing the motive. As the poet Carl Sandburg famously said, "If the facts are against you, argue the law. If the law is against you, argue the facts. If the law and the facts are both against you, pound the table and yell like hell." In this case, the state had one thing they could yell like hell about, and that was this. Isaac had come between Joey and Brianne, so Isaac had to die.
In the article Helen of Rome, Meredith Prince talks about the differing representations of Helen of Troy, the supposed cause of the Trojan War. Was she, as Christopher Marlowe wrote in Dr. Faustus, the face that launched a thousand ships? Or as Kenneth Reckford has written, was she a passive victim of fate? Or was she actually a Yoko Ono-esque scapegoat, with the Trojan War actually fought over tin? Part of the problem in disaggregating all these competing conceptions is that there isn't one coherent version of Helen, a real person depicted in mythology as the daughter of the human Leda and the god Zeus. Indeed, in the Aeneid, Virgil rarely offers his own judgments of Helen, instead having several characters describe their differing, often inconsistent takes on her. The point of Prince's article is to show the reader how each narrator's bias, such as their views on things like gender and nationality, as well as narrative context, affects each representation of Helen. As Prince notes, her article is greatly influenced by Irene de Jong's study of focalization in the Iliad. Focalization is a term coined by French narrative theorist Gérard Genette, and it refers to the perspective through which a narrative is presented. Imagine an eyewitness to a shooting giving several statements. First to a beat cop on the scene, a second statement to a detective at the police station, a third to the defense private investigator at a food court, a fourth to the prosecutor in his office, and a fifth to the jury from the witness stand. Each of these statements might differ in significant ways based upon the context, just as the speaker's version of events might differ depending upon whether he was a bully or bullied, rich or poor, black or white, gay or straight. In the story we're telling, Brienne is Northwest Georgia's own Helen of Rome. That's not us mythologizing. As we noted last episode, from day one of the investigation, Brienne was believed to be the trigger that caused a war between Joey and Isaac, Rome's own Paris and Menelaus. At Joey's trial, District Attorney Tammy Colston couldn't have painted a clearer picture. Here's her discussing the motivation for the crime. Now, unfortunately, despite repeated attempts, we haven't gotten the trial audio, but here I'm going to read from Tammy Colston's opening statement. First of all, we know beyond any doubt whatsoever that Joey Watkins hated, despised Isaac Dawkins. We agree on that, no doubt about it. He hated him because he had taken his precious Brienne. Now, the evidence is going to show that Joey Watkins hated Isaac Dawkins. I think the evidence is going to show that Joey Watkins is the only person that hated Isaac Dawkins. The evidence is going to show the reason that he hated Isaac Dawkins so badly is because Isaac had started dating Joey's long girlfriend, Brienne Scarber. Brienne, a cute little girl, had been dating Joey Watkins off and on for several years, but she had broke up with Joey. And Isaac's sister, Samantha, and her boyfriend, Paul, got Brienne and Isaac together. Isaac wanted to date Brienne. He asked Samantha about it. Hey, you know, can you fix? I would like to date her. Well, Joey Watkins didn't like that. He didn't like it one bit. And he told numerous people, and he told them over and over, I'm going to get him. I'm going to whip him. I'm going to kill him. This went over a period of 6 months. Even after Isaac and Brienne had quit dating, he still was doing that.
Now, we're still attempting to get the audio from Joey's trial. I believe firmly, based on the existing rules and the court guidance out there, that these are public records that should be available to us. Unfortunately, the Floyd County Superior Court has taken the opposite position and decided that they are not records that we are entitled to have copies of. Now, you are going to hear some trial audio in this episode and later ones, because we do have access to trial audio from a different trial, one in 2002, for Joey's co-defendant, Mark Free. Mark Free was acquitted. He was alleged to be the shooter in this crime, but the jury found him not guilty. And because of that acquittal, the audio was available to us. Many of the witnesses in Mark's trial and Joey's trial were the same. So we have them testifying at his trial. But it should be noted that this is not actually what they said at Joey's trial in the previous summer. Now, this episode is not just about Brienne, because the story is way bigger than that, but because the state's case was entirely dependent upon it, it is necessary to examine the role she played in order to understand what happened at Joey's trial and what ultimately led to his conviction.
And the role she played is tied directly to her relationship with Joey. They began dating in 1997, and they were on and off through their final breakup on October 31st, 1999. It clearly was not a healthy relationship.
There were problems between Joey and Brienne. It went both ways. And no one here is seeking to defend Joey's behavior. One clear from last episode, it's pretty much established fact that Joey was a giant jerk at times, and worse. And other people saw the way he acted on Brienne and commented on it, like Brienne's friend Jessica.
The people he starts trouble with, usually who are they or what causes that trouble?
you could look at Joey the wrong way and he'd start something with you. Mm-hmm. Just everybody.
Has he ever frightened you or bothered you at all?
Just when him and Brian would get into fights.
What would he say? Would he say anything to you? Mm-hmm. Threaten you at all?
Not me.
What would he tell Brian?
He'd just like yell at her, call her a few names, hit her car, kick her car.
We only know Brianne from a limited number of sources. Now, unlike Helen of Troy, Brianne can speak for herself. She did give a statement to the police, and she testified at Joey's trial. Unfortunately, she not unreasonably did not want to talk to us, so we do not have her views now on what happened back then, which means we're left looking at the record and trying to piece together motivations and relationships and long-ago teenage drama.
But overall, most of what we know about Brianne comes from decades-old statements by outside observers, and a lot of them were her ex-boyfriends, so generally not going to be unbiased sources. In effect, Brianne was a MacGuffin used by the prosecutor. The motivation for everything that Joey did, even though she wasn't really in the picture at the time, didn't take any actions that prompted the state's theory of the crime, and really played no role whatsoever in Joey's motivations after Isaac's murder. In effect, she was like the Maltese Falcon in the movie of the same name, something put in there as a plot device to show certain motivations and to move the plot along, when in fact, it really wasn't the motivation for anything.
So here's the problem with the state's ultimate theory with this case. Yes, Isaac did date Brianne, and yes, Brianne was Joey's ex, that Joey had harassed her past boyfriends. That's something that happened ongoing. There are more than one instances in which he would call up, harass, or try to fight people she'd been dating. But Isaac and Brianne broke up in September of 99, and Joey and Brianne had started dating again for a month until they broke up for the final time, the end of October. Then Brianne started dating Chad, who is... I apologize in advance to our listeners. This is a very complicated list of witnesses, but Brianne was dating Joey's sister's ex-boyfriend, who broke up with Joey's sister and began to date Joey's ex sometime in that fall. At the same time, Joey began dating a new girl named Aslyn down in Cedarton, and they were pretty serious. He was spending basically all his free time with her, and Brianne wasn't part of the picture anymore. So why in January of 2000 would Joey decide to get revenge or something by killing a previous boyfriend of his ex-girlfriend from 6 months before, whom he dated and broken up with again, when he now had a new girlfriend he was head over heels for? One of the first things I noticed when I started going through the files in Joey's case was this odd section about like 15 pages where someone had taken a bunch of photos, yearbook pages, whatnot, and not literally draw mustaches on them, but basically there's a girl in the photo that has had lots of very juvenile, insulting things written about her. I eventually learned that this girl was Joey's sister Tandy, but I still didn't know why it was in the file or what relevance it had. So what's the deal with that scrapbook?
Which scrapbook are you talking about?
The one with Tandy and someone's defaced it and written mean things all over it?
That was Brianne and Chad trying to get back at me and my sister.
How was that getting back at you?
Because I broke up with Brianne and my sister broke up with Chad. And they got together in spite of me and my sister. See, that was my sister's ex, and she's my ex, so they got together to try to make us mad or jealous or whatever, and me and my sister kind of laughed it off. It was kind of funny, and they were mad because they didn't get a rise out of us, I guess.
How long did they date for?
Brianne and Chad?
Yeah.
I think, shoot, I don't know. They were together during my trial. They got together, like, right before Isaac was shot, and they had this thing going on or whatever, and they actually stayed together for a while after I was locked up.
You know, my first thought when I started going through the files was, if Joey killed this guy out of something to do with Brianne and anger and macho-ness, why didn't he kill Chad instead?
Exactly. It makes
I mean, he's the logical target.
It makes no sense to me.
So let's talk a little bit about Joey and Brianne's relationship. Brianne started liking Joey when she was 14 and he was 16. She started dating him the next year when she turned 15, and they dated on and off for about 2.5 years until they broke up in October of 1989. But every time they got together, there were troubles between them. Her relationship with Isaac was brief, somewhere between June of 1989 through September. And after they broke up, Brianne actually got back together with Joey in the fall of 1999.
The whole idea of why Joey killed Isaac was because he was so outraged that Isaac had stolen his girl from him, even though they had broken up and he had gotten back with his girl after. But the whole theory that Isaac had stolen his girlfriend away, it's true in a certain sense, but it's also clear that Joey and Brianne didn't actually break things off, not entirely, while Isaac was Brianne's boyfriend. Here's one letter from Joey to Brianne that was written sometime in the summer of 99 while she was dating Isaac. Hey, baby girl. I'm sitting here at work with you in my mind, as always. I really think that you need to sit and think about what is going on. Today, when that happened, you started crying. It was like you were disappointed in what happened. You never acted like that before. I'm sorry. You used to always have a big smile on your face. I don't know where I'm going to stay tonight, so I probably won't be able to talk to you. But Brianne, I love you with all of my heart, and nothing makes me happier than to see you happy like you are now. Isaac seems to make you happy. Please, beautiful, think about this. It would hurt me worse to see you fight with your family about me and be upset than for you to be with Isaac and be happy. We always turn out together in the end. Just remember I love you, and you will always be my beautiful baby girl. Love, Joey Watkins.
This is kind of interesting to me because it almost seems to imply that he's saying that you can be with Isaac and be happy, but in the end, we'll probably get back together again anyways. Is that what he's saying here?
It is kind of true because they did break up and get together again several times. And I mean, that so far that had been the pattern of the relationship. And, you know, I guess if you're the prosecution, it works both ways. You can show that, oh, look, he was obsessed with her and wanted to get with her again. But on the other hand, there's no murderous hostility. This is when Isaac is actively dating Brianne. Brianne is Isaac's girlfriend. And Joey writes a letter saying, Isaac seems like he makes you happy, and that makes me happy. That somehow becomes murderous rage 6 months later when Brianne and Isaac have long broken up.
On the other hand, there are some of his emails to Brianne that actually do show some abusive language and insults, telling her to stay the hell out of his life, but in much more colorful terms. Here's a couple of the worst examples of that. It's an email written to Brianne on July 16th, 1999, and it's in response to an email from her, and here's what Joey says. Look, bitch, do not email this computer anymore. Drop dead whore.
And Rabia didn't add it in, but there are literally 40 plus exclamation points added in there for emphasis.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important to note, we don't have the original email. Brianne only printed out the email from Joey, but her email to him had the subject Tandy. Now, Tandy was Joey's sister, and she had been, at one point, one of Brianne's close friends, but they'd had something of a falling out, which we'll get into later. So whatever Brianne was emailing Joey about, it was about his sister, who Brianne no longer liked. Although his email is obviously not appropriate, I suspect that Brianne's wasn't any nicer.
Well, here's the thing. What's interesting to me about this email is that it doesn't show like he's obsessed with her. He's saying, don't email this computer anymore. He's saying, leave us alone or leave me alone. And it doesn't seem necessarily threatening, although it's rude. But there's another email about a month later that does seem like it could be a little bit of a threat. So this is an email written August 30th of 1999, and Joey writes, do not bother me, please. Lots and lots of exclamation marks. I'm fine without you, and tell your boy not to bother my girlfriend, and the next time he pages her or calls her, we just might have a repeat of the other night. Except this time his drunk ass might not leave. I'm not playing games anymore. That seems a little more threatening.
And here's another complication. This is when Brianne was still dating Isaac, and when Joey writes your boy, I'm pretty sure he's talking about Isaac. But at the same time this happened, Joey was dating a girl named Erica. Erica was also Isaac's ex-girlfriend.
Even after these emails, Joey and Brianne got back together in September or October of 1999, after Brianne and Isaac's brief relationship had fizzled out.
But things didn't last between Joey and Brianne either. And here is Brianne giving her version of events about how their relationship ended for the final time.
I went back to him in September.
Of what year?
This year.
Of 99. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. His sister was bringing me pictures of him and like, yeah, this is when we went to Florida, which I think was a whole scheme to get me back with him. So we started seeing each other. I would, you know, tell my mom I was going to Kmart and meet him. And one night we snuck out and it was Halloween night, I think, October 31st. We snuck out and we dropped her off at her boyfriend's house and we rode around. Well, I wasn't talking to him for some reason. He had said something to me and I wasn't talking to him. Well, it made him really upset and he was driving my car. And he got out. Mm-hmm. He started walking across the road and naturally I was beside him and told him, please don't do this, please don't do this, get in the car. Well, he acted like he was calling his ex-girlfriend, the girl that he had went out with for like those 5 months that we were broken up. I was like, who are you calling? And I parked right there and I was like, please get in. And he was like, yeah, hey, Erica, what are you doing? You know, and I was like, give me that phone. I said, don't talk to her. I said, give me the phone. And when I went to reach for it, like I had it in my hand and he grabbed my hair and he pulled me to the ground. Like he pulled me to the ground. And I mean, I just got back up and I tried to grab the phone again. Well, I got the phone. He was like, here, you can have the phone. I was just playing. And he was like, fine, you can have the phone. So I got the phone and I was like, on his phone, he's got caller ID and where you can tell who he called out to. So I was driving like this and I had the phone out the window because after he gave it to me, he was like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't let her have it. So he was reaching over me trying to get the phone and I was going through the caller ID and I was going about 60 right there near Rome. Right, I could see Rome in the distance. And he said, fine, if you won't give me the phone. And then he took the emergency brake and lifted it up. And then I spun out of control. I think I swung like 3 times and hit the guardrail and totaled my car.
You get be treated to hospital?
No. So then I crawled out of the window because I couldn't get out of the car. I took his cell phone and I just threw it on the ground. I was so mad at that time. And
where did the wreck happen in?
Okay, I could see Rome in the distance. I was coming this way. And after that happened, I got out of the car and I mean, I'm hysterical at this time. I laid down on the ground and I didn't know what to do. And he was like, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. And he was hugging me. And I think that's the point that I realized, no, I can't do this anymore.
According to Brianne, best I can tell, they have a fight of some sort because Joey's ex, Erica, is paging or calling. And as she's driving along and is reading the phone out the window, I don't even know, Joey pulled up the emergency brake and caused the car to like spin in circles and then it wrecked and she decided to end it.
Was this a matter of contention between who dumped who?
Well, who wrecked the car? I mean, the car wrecked and they broke up because of it. Joey says that she wrecked her car because she was driving. And Brianne has this claim that Joey pulled up the emergency brake. Brianne says she left Joey because of this and Joey says he left her because of this.
And I'm guessing the state believed Brianne.
Well, that's the thing, because there were police records. You can hear Sutton ask about them in the interview. And he does question her closely. Where were you when this happened? Which agency responded? Who had the records from your response? What did you tell them? Are you sure you told them that? Like, at some point, she starts going on about a deer, and she claimed that she told the police that a deer caused the accident. But really, she decided later to tell them it was Joey when she decided to come clean. It's a mess of a story, and we don't have the police report, so we don't even know what they wrote down at the time. Either way, what's clear is that it wasn't just a matter of Joey being jealous of Brianne. This fight was over another girl, Joey's ex, and also Isaac's ex, who Joey had previously dated. This is Erica. And it was Brianne's jealousy over Erica that led to this car crash and breakup, one way or another.
I mean, it just sounds like a very kind of high school vibe going on right here. And none of it, to me, still rises to the motivation, you know, to the level of being motivation to murder anybody.
But it also destroys any narrative, to me, that, like you heard Tammy Colston, as she was saying in her opening and closing right. statements,
yeah,
he was mad at Isaac because he took his precious Brianne away. Well, no, Isaac had broken up with Brianne months before because he'd gotten tired of it. And Joey was dating her again. It was this incident that had nothing to do with Isaac, but had something to do with another girl that Brianne was jealous of that actually caused the end of the relationship. Like, her first reaction after the car crash is to say, I was still mad, so I grabbed the phone back again.
Right.
And then Sutton stops her, and she's like, oh, I was just hysterical. I was so upset. I'm like, a second ago, you were saying you were mad and still going for the phone after the wreck. So you couldn't have been, like, too scared or hysterical if your first thought is still, let's get that phone and see who he's paging. I mean, if you pulled the breakup at 60 miles an hour, bad things are going to happen. But her reaction is not to be upset or mad at Joey. It's, where's that phone? Give me that phone. Let me see who you're calling.
Now, we're going to take a short break so we can hear about one of our amazing sponsors.
Okay, listeners, I'm going to drop some facts on you. No fluff, just facts. And these facts are going to save you time. And as a busy group of people, we at Undisclosed know how important time is. So are you ready? Here we go. The Undisclosed team uses Stamps.com for all our postage needs, and we have a lot of postage needs. The importance of time? Yeah, so Stamps.com gets that. Just how important is time to us? Well, between recording, researching, writing, and working our full-time day jobs, there just aren't enough hours in the day to waste at the post office. So to avoid those time-consuming trips, we at Undisclosed found a better way. And that better way is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you get the postage you need when you need it. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. You can even get special postage discounts you just can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. So are you guys ready for another fact? Well, Stamps.com is giving our listeners a special offer. So check it out. Right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and use our promo code UNDISCLOSED for this special offer. You'll get a 4-week trial plus $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. You can go to that offer right now, and you should, like literally, pause the podcast, go there right now to Stamps.com, get the bonus, and then come back and join us. So go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in undisclosed. And that's a fact. Go to stamps.com and enter undisclosed. You'll get a bonus offer. Back to the podcast.
The state had to work with what it had. It had to shoehorn some kind of theory together, and the only way to do that is to make Brianne the face that launched 1,000 ships.
So the state's theory was that Joey was so filled with jealous rage over Isaac dating his ex-girlfriend Brianne that it led to him committing homicide. The problem with this, though, is that Joey had a very different reaction to someone else he knew dating Brianne. This is Delane from his interview with Claire earlier this year. He was friends with Joey's sister, and sometime in late 1998 or early 1999, when Joey and Brianne were on a break, Joey's sister Tandy set Delane up on a date with Brianne. Later, Joey and Brianne got back together again, but the communications between Brianne and Delane didn't exactly stop. So here's Delane talking about how he finally ended things with Brianne and the interactions he had with Joey during this time.
I was sitting with some friends I played football with, and Joey pulled up in a red Mustang and had Brianne in the passenger side seat of the car. And I saw the Mustang go by. At that time, there were very few red Mustangs of that caliber. But Mustang turned around. You know, I wasn't paying attention to it after it passed. But obviously, it turned around and come back by my house and pulled up at the top of my driveway. And I'm with my friends, so I got to be tough, right? I got to be tough. That's how I wanted to carry myself. I'm not that person, but I wanted to be everything in my friend's eyes. So Joey is hollering all types of stuff. You're hollering at me, putting the pressure on me in front of my friend. So I walk up the driveway, and I actually reached in, you know, leaned on the door of the car. Brianne's sitting here, and Joey's sitting in the driver's seat, and he's hollering stuff back and forth. And I actually reached in and hit Joey. And when I come back, when I reach back, I hit Brianne by accident. And when they left at that time, and the law showed up at my house. But we play football for Pepperell, and we're in Lindale. So if the law's called, you know, at that time, and I'm not saying anything bad about Pepperell, but that's how it was. I played football for Pepperell.
What does that mean? I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, it's like small town, you know, you're like the county police or, you know, they saw it, they pulled up, and they said, "You boys play football for Pepperell?" "Yes, sir." And they said, we had a call saying somebody got an altercation. I said, "Did some guy come running his mouth? I don't know what happened." And, you know, "Y'all boys, you stay out of trouble."
Okay.
You know, so no big deal. You know, something happened, but it's no big deal. The next weekend, During that week, Brianne had been calling me, paging me. Pagers were in at that time. Apparently, Joey and Brianne had a problem that weekend, and out of pure luck, we see each other at the bowling alley, Floyd County Lanes. And as I was walking in through the parking lot, which is real close to the road, I see Joey's truck slow down on the curb, so I don't know if he saw me as he passed by or whatever. Joey pulled up with one of his friends. I don't know who his friend was, and he was running his mouth, and I pulled my knife out. Funny thing is, and you know, I've got to be tough, you know. And I pulled my knife out, but when I pulled my knife out, I actually dropped it. And here's where it all come to a head. I said, Joey, man, we keep arguing about this BITCA. We keep arguing about her. She's the problem. I'm not calling her. Now I do. If she pages me like she does, and I showed him my pager like she does, I said, that's not my fault. And, you know, we're going back and forth just, you know, I'm pissed because he's upset and I understand how he feels. He's still hurt because he loves Brianne, whatever. But that night, we settled it. You know, as hard as it may seem for some people to realize, we settled something that was so big to Joey that night. And we settled it in an immature way. But I was like, here, you know, I'll call Brianne from inside the bowling alley. And I'll talk to her, and I'll let you hear what she says, and then you can talk to her. End of problem. That ended it. That ended the future communication between Brianne and myself, and I think that really put the icing on the cake for him, because it wasn't long after that. I mean, like a short time after that, Joey and I became really close, and we started hanging out. I never heard much about Brianne from him. He was dating some girl in Cedartown.
Aslan Hope.
I think some blonde-headed girl. She was cute.
So Joey and Delane fought over Brianne to the point where Joey called the cops on Delane. I mean, he was a football star. Something happened. But he had reason to be mad at Delane, and he was. Delane even pulled a knife on him. Although Isaac and Joey also had their own interactions, their own run-ins, the incidents with Delane seemed more intense. And you can, like, compare which one was worse, who did Joey dislike more. But there's no basis for thinking that Isaac somehow was more of a threat or pissed off Joey more than Delane had. And yet, Joey and Delane became great friends after Delane ended with Brianne. I also think that hearing from Delane places Joey's actions back then somewhat in context. It shows that this whole getting mad over a girl and punching someone in a car thing, that wasn't something that didn't ever happen here. This was, to some extent, a regular part of this group's lives. They didn't fight all the time, but they threatened to fight all the time. And as Joey's father told me the other day, usually one of the two people in a fight or a proposed fight, one would get scared and the other would be glad of it.
A lot of smack talk.
A lot of smack talk. I love all the incidences in the files where someone tells the cops, oh yeah, he called me on the phone and said, meet me at the parking lot behind, like, the Walmart, it'll go down. And then the cops are like, so what happened next? They're like, no one showed up. So in addition to the very clear messed up relationship between the two, by the time Brianne got to her police statement on March 13th, 2000, she began alleging claims of physical abuse. As we discussed last week, she had previously gone around and told people that Joey had shot at her, but aside from that, she didn't make claims about Joey being physically abusive to other people until this police interview.
So this is where the complication gets. You know, as somebody who has worked with and represented women victims of domestic violence over the years, this is why we have to be very careful with these statements. But sometimes absence of evidence is not absence of abuse in these situations. And I think all three of us as attorneys understand that when you're dealing with victims of domestic violence, inconsistent statements or not even reporting things, I mean, this is fairly common in these situations. I mean, that's why the abuse exists. So, you know, we can't completely dismiss it, but at the same time, we have to also be able to have some level of veracity for the allegations if we're going to examine this being the sole kind of motivator for this murder.
You know, I think the best we can do as podcasters to give a fair shake to everyone involved, is simply to go through and look at what people said then, look what they said now, and you as an audience can listen to that and assess it. Maybe we can weigh in a little bit as to what we think, but it's the fairest thing seems to be to say, look, here is a story that was told by Brianne. Here is some evidence that might tend to contradict it or call it into question. And as Rabia said, you know, absence of evidence is not absence of domestic violence. Inconsistencies don't necessarily prove that something is false.
And also, this is not just about allegations of domestic violence that we are trying to figure out really hold up or not. This happens across lots of different statements, right? I mean, we want to be able to make sure, like Colin said, everybody gets a fair shake, that if we're finding inconsistencies and complete, like, you know, flip-flopping on other statements that have been made, then we also have to revisit these too.
This is one area where we can let Brianne speak for herself, because we do have the audio from her police interview. And here is Brianne's statements concerning incidents of abuse that there were no other witnesses to.
And then with another incident like that, I was getting ready and I was in the shower and their shower door didn't lock, because, I mean, I spent most of my time over there because I was supposed to be with him all the time. And I was taking a shower and he got mad at me for something, I don't remember what it was. And you know that clean and ammonia that you clean with? He poured it in all over me when I was in the shower, and it got in my eyes and I couldn't see for like an hour straight.
He threw clean and ammonia on you? What did he get mad about?
I don't even remember. I can't even remember. There's just so many things I don't remember. And but every time he would do it, he grabbed me up and he was like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. That is exactly what he did every single time he would ever do anything to me. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to, I'm so sorry.
And you forgive him?
Yeah, every single time. My mom didn't know about half the stuff that ever went on because I never told her. And with bruises and stuff, I could always play it off for cheerleading.
Where did the bruises you have? Where were they?
All over my arms, all over my legs, everywhere. But I could always play them off. But he never did it on my face, though.
Did he hit you with his fist, any?
No, basically he would just, like, throw me around, throw me down. One time, like I said earlier, he would hurt me physically, and then I would go out with a guy just because I knew he wouldn't break up with me because he was just obsessive. And we had went to Calhoun, me and this girl had went to Calhoun to find some guys just because he had been running his mouth and doing what he usually did. And so...
What did he usually do? Explain what you mean by what he usually did.
He would just cuss at me and slap me. And...
How many times has he ever slapped you, physically slapped you with his hands?
I don't even remember.
A lot?
Not too much, but when he would get mad enough, yeah, he would.
So all of these statements that have come from Brianne about the abuse emerged after Isaac's death. And it's important to note that she was very close friends with Samantha, Isaac's sister, and she was in the hospital the day he was shot. And so from the very beginning, she was speaking to the police, even before Isaac had passed away.
The day following Isaac's death, Brianne went and filed a warrant against Joey, seeking to have his arrest for assault based on an incident that occurred a few weeks previously on Christmas Eve when they were at the mall.
Would you say he lied a lot?
I don't think he can utter a sentence without lying, honestly. I mean, I'm not joking, honestly. And then me and this guy were at the mall right in front of Express, and we were talking to two other guys, and then we were just sitting there talking. It was Christmas Eve, so it
you
was
who?
Me and this guy.
What? When was this? Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Christmas?
It was Christmas Eve.
Christmas
so
Eve.
So the mall was packed.
And 99.
Yeah. The mall was packed and we were sitting there, and then I saw somebody like from this side of my peripheral vision come up to Chad and was like, yeah, you think I need to grow some, da da da, and it was Joey. He started just mouthing off to him, yelling at him, screaming at him, saying, you want to fight, you want to fight? I guess because he was with me.
Yelling at who?
Chad, the guy I was with.
Okay.
And yelling at him and screaming at him, and I was like, I looked at the other two guys we were talking to, and I was like, are y'all not going to do anything? I said, do something. He's about to hit him because he had his fist balled up like this. And they wouldn't do anything, so I took, like, right here of Joey's back, and I kind of pulled him back to get him away from him. That's when he turned around and he punched me in the ribs. And then
punched
he ran.
With his fist?
Mm-hmm. And then he ran off. And that's what we just went to court about.
And you took out a warrant on him?
Mm-hmm.
And what, a simple battery or some kind of family violence or something?
I don't know, but he did go to jail for it.
Now, we have several different versions of this story from Brianne, from Chad, and from Joey's friend Josh. But we also have a statement from an unbiased observer, someone who knew of but didn't really know Joey personally.
Here's what Stephen Walker had to say. Well, me and Graham was sitting there talking, and I turned around and looked, and I saw Joey walking. Well, I kind of knew Joey a little bit, not real much, and he come over there and just started talking to us, asking how we were doing and so on. And so we started talking, and I looked back, and I saw Brianne coming. I met them both at the same time, so I didn't really know Brianne or Joey that well. Brianne was asking us to get Joey away. We didn't know what was going on, so then Joey and Brianne, they started talking, and Brianne was telling him to leave, that she didn't want to see any problems. He said that he wasn't coming up there for any problems. She started basically pushing him away and telling him to go away, and he was kind of defending himself. That was it. There's nothing else from then on out that we saw.
Now, the prosecutor at trial presents this as if it was a biased statement, but I mean, this guy wasn't friends with Brianne or Joey. He had no reason to lie for either of them.
So you have the prosecution in this case alleging that Joey went after every boy that Brianne dated. But the problem is that the reverse is true, too.
Essentially, every girl that Joey dated has a story to tell about Brianne trying to cause problems, trying to start fights.
One of those girlfriends was Erica, who dated Joey in 1999. Here's Erica testifying at trial, and she's first giving an answer. We were shopping through the mall, me and a good friend of mine. I remember her, meaning Brianne, standing in the window, I guess holding these shoes at work as I walked by. We continued shopping that night, and we come back to a store that was kind of down the hallway of the mall from the one that she worked at. When I walked back outside to go back toward the food court, she come up behind us. But I don't remember what was said between us. But that was over and done with, and I went to leave that area and went to the other end of the mall to another store. And after I left that store, we left the mall because it was closing. There was a letter on my car. Then she's asked, do you know who this letter was from? She responds, it was from her. Question, and was this a friendly letter, threatening letter, or how would you describe it? Her answer, it was, I wouldn't say threatening. That is a little more than what it was, but it was, question, did it upset you? Answer, yes, sir.
And we'll get into this more later, but with other girlfriends, later girlfriends, she did insert herself long after Isaac's death into Joey's relationships.
And then we get to what we are calling the Checkers incident, which seems like the real major encounter between Joey and Isaac during the summer of 1999, that the prosecution used to show Joey's hatred of Isaac and of his violent nature. And we should note that the Checkers incident is only the Checkers incident if you actually go by Brianne's version. Something did happen that night. We have statements from four people about it, one from Isaac's best friend, two from people in Joey's car at the time it happened, Adam and Erica, and one from Brianne. But Brianne's version is the only version of the story that actually involves her. Here's what Brianne said.
And every time you were dating Isaac, did Joey ever come around and confront Isaac and you together?
One night, me and Sam were together, and it was just a girls' night. And
Sam
Dawkins.
Yeah.
And Isaac and Jay, his best friend, were together. Well, they had went to Applebee's and got drunk. And they were sitting at Checkers. No, they weren't sitting at Checkers. Okay, you know in town, in East Rome, the Checkers right there?
Right.
And then you can turn and go to Broad Street right there?
Right.
Okay, they were sitting at the red light right there.
Right.
And me and Sam were driving, and we noticed somebody on my bumper, and it was Joey. He was like this far from my bumper in his girlfriend's car. And he pulled up beside me. He was like, you effing bitch, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he just was mouthing off. And I said, go away. Then he got behind me again and got this close to my
car. What kind of baby was he in then?
It was like a 90 Honda Accord.
So he was running his mouth at you, cursing, but Isaac wasn't in the car.
Yeah, he saw it from the other side.
But Isaac wasn't in the car with you.
No, no. And he saw it, and he knew it was Joey. Well, that pissed him off. It pissed off, you know, Isaac off. So Isaac pulls into Checkers. We pull into Checkers. And I was like, Isaac, don't worry about it. He's crazy. Don't worry about it.
Where did Joey go? He drive off?
I don't know where he went. But I had found out that Isaac had been drinking, and it upset me a lot. because I don't like that. And I was like, you know, you don't need to do that if you're upset about anything. Well, then he got mad and he went looking for Joey. Well, he found Joey somewhere, I don't know where. Jay could probably tell you that because he was with him.
Right.
Joey was like, yeah, come to my house, come to my house. And so I followed him to his house. And then Adam can tell you this too, I know, Rod. Joey got out and went to Isaac's truck in the middle of the road and just started hitting him through the car.
Hitting Isaac?
Just started hitting him through the car.
At trial, her story changes a bit again. This time she says that she was driving around with her friend Samantha and they were having a girls' night when suddenly Joey starts trying to run her off the road or follow her, and Isaac sees this and becomes upset. So when Brianne pulls off into a Checkers parking lot, both Joey and Isaac pull up after her, and she says, well, Joey just kept circling, and I pleaded, and she's asked who kept circling, and she says, Joey. I pleaded with Isaac. I was like, please don't go. Please don't go. I even went as far as to tell him I would break up with him if he went, because I knew. Then he left, and me and Sam left. Now, here's Adam's version of the same event. Adam had been, at the time, a friend of Joey's. He was out with Joey that night. In fact, Joey was on a date with Erica. Erica and Joey and Adam had gone out to get some food. And here's what Adam remembers.
There's one other episode where Jay Barnett and Isaac come past Joey by the YMCA. This is when Joey was dating Erica Evans. Well, me, Joey, and Erica Evans was in her Honda. She got a 92 model Honda. Isaac pulls up beside Joey, and Jay holds his head out the window and asks Joey why he's been saying all this stuff about Isaac.
And who said this?
Jay Burnett asked Joey, he said, why you got a problem with Isaac?
Uh-huh.
And right then, Joey went to popping off and told him, you know, he said, well, I want both y'all. I want both y'all.
Was it at the YMCA?
No, this was at the store before you get to the YMCA. We'd done turned around and come back down to the store.
Oh, so that's when they went up to his house.
Yeah, that's when they went up to his house.
Okay.
At trial, he does give much the same story. Now, Isaac had been drinking that night, so Jay is driving. And here's what Jay remembers.
The first time I think of where I was actually with Isaac when we met up with Joey was one night in town. We kept seeing Joey and seeing how he was following us. So we pulled in at a gas station. He pulled in beside us. And Joey had said something about, I heard you're looking for me. And Isaac was like, well, what are you talking about? And Joey's like, well, you want your ass whipped? And then Isaac was like, yeah, sure, get out and whip it. And then Joey was like, well, not here, just follow me. So we wound up following Joey for what seemed like an hour and through town. Seemed like he was rounding up all of his friends before he went to wherever to fight. So we didn't know it was Joey's house, but we pulled up to Joey's house and Joey had gotten out of the vehicle and his dad was out front and I think five or six others were out there and just kind of taunting Isaac from the road.
Who was?
Joey. Telling Isaac to step out, you know, calling him pussy and, you know, saying, just kept on, you know, just saying stuff to him, trying to get him to come out of the truck.
So in Jay's first statement, Brianne isn't even there. There's no Brianne at all. So here's what Jay says at trial. He's asked, okay, somewhere along the line, Joey sees Brianne, right? And he answers, I think we were pretty much behind him the whole time. I don't think he ever saw her. He's asked, so you're saying that you never met up with Brianne? And Jay says, after we began following Joey, no. Then he's asked, okay, did you meet up with Brianne in the parking lot of the Checkers? And Jay responds, that was before we saw him. Him meaning Joey. And then he's asked, and you ended up at a second service station up there at Five Points? And he says, yep. And then he's asked, and she didn't get upset about his condition? You're saying that, did Isaac get mad when he talked to Brianne? And Jay responds, he got a little frustrated when she told him that Joey had been riding her bumper. And she got upset when she found out he had something to drink at Applebee's.
At trial, Erica also testifies about the incident. She says she was with Joey that night, and Adam was also in the car. And she says they were driving around, and she has no memory of seeing Brianne that night. Joey wasn't riding Brianne's bumper that she knew, and she was in the front seat in that car. Her car, actually, that Joey was driving. All she remembers is that they were in a gas station, and Isaac was there, too, all of a sudden. And they started exchanging words and yelling, and then they drove back to Joey's house where they got in a scuffle of some sort. Joey tried to punch at Isaac. Everyone agrees with that, although it seems like he may have gotten less of Isaac and more of the truck. Not actually hit him, but The fight doesn't happen. Isaac ends up driving away. And that's it. So I was going through all the reports we have about the sort of semi-fight you had with Isaac. Mm-hmm. And you were on a date with Erica Evans that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all ever even see Brianne?
Yeah.
You did? Okay.
In the same spot I was just telling you about in Kmart parking lot. You know how you used to cruise from Kmart to Taco Bell and back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
We seen her while we were riding around.
What happened when you saw her?
She was typical Brianne, flipping us off and stuff.
Was that it?
Yeah, trying to start stuff with Erica.
She's the only story, though, that has her in it. The rest of them are like, Brianne wasn't involved in this. And Brianne's like, yeah, he was circling around me in a parking lot.
Circling around her in a parking lot? That's okay, whatever. She's saying I was circling around her in a parking lot that night. And in the meantime, I'm driving Erica's car. Do you really think Erica would go for that?
Yeah, well, even Jay agrees that they saw her at some point. I mean, it seems like they met up somewhere, and she told them that you'd been harassing her, so they went looking for you.
Wow. So does Erica, is she saying that I was harassing Brianne that night?
No, she doesn't recall seeing Brianne. She says, like, that y'all went out for, like, food or something, and she didn't remember seeing Brianne. Did you know that Isaac had already talked to Brianne, or did you know that they'd been communicating or anything when y'all saw Isaac that night?
What do you mean, as far as, like, them dating, or?
No, like, that night. It was, like, when you ran into...
Oh, no. I didn't even know Isaac was in town that night.
So you just happened to run into him from your perspective?
He followed us, or he pulled in behind us when we went to the, when I pulled into the little Texaco to get cigarettes. He pulled up.
Do you recall what y'all said to each other?
Yeah, he pulled in, and it was like when I was coming out, I got back into the car, and they came in, and it was like window to window, and he said something like, or you messing with Brianne, or you been calling Brianne, or this, that, and the other. And we exchanged words. I told him, man, I don't care about her or whatever, and whatever was said. And he went to talking trash, and I may have said something. I don't remember. Erica was trying to tell me to calm down, just calm down, and I can't remember what I was said exactly.
Or what was he upset about?
I have no clue.
Did he think you and Brianne were still hooking up, or?
I think he did. I think he was scared that I was going to take her back.
Were y'all still hooking up?
Not at that time, no.
Okay.
No. Feels like Erica was a part of that, too. You know, because he dated Erica also.
So in short, if we put all five of these stories together, we can have a few takeaways. First, no one saw Joey following Brianne, and two people in the car with Joey specifically say they don't remember it. Second, Jay says that Brianne told them at Checkers that Joey had been riding her bumper, although this initial statement to police doesn't include any mention of Brianne at all. Third, Isaac and Jay then went searching for Joey, according to Brianne only, or just started driving around, according to Jay, and then found and or ran into him.
So, here's what we have. According to Adam, who would give some of the most damaging testimony against Joey at trial, and certainly was not lying in his favor in any fashion, Brianne had nothing to do with the incident. And according to Erica, who likewise had no reason to be doing any favors for Joey, she has no memory of Brianne being involved in the incident. And according to Jay, in his first statement, he and Isaac followed Joey back to his place, and according to him at trial, may have seen Brianne earlier in the night, because she was annoyed about Isaac being drunk. But as far as he knows, Joey never saw Brianne. And in fact, he doesn't think Joey saw Brianne at all. And then we have Brianne. And according to her trial testimony, she was literally the center of the story, with Joey circling around her, challenging Isaac for her.
Yeah, I mean, Susan, as you know, it's really complicated. There's a rule of evidence, the collateral evidence rule, that says generally we don't want to get into these matters that don't relate to the central issue at trial. There is a rule that allows in evidence to prove modus operandi or method of operation, sort of a common plan or scheme. You can introduce prior act under some circumstances to prove motive, but I think, you know, really the big takeaway here is this was a pretty terrible relationship between Joey and Brianne. It might have been at a minimum, emotionally abusive. There might be physical abusiveness, other things, etc. But what's so tough is all we can really look at are these reports and this testimony, these statements. And, you know, the trial is about, as we'll get to later, whether Joey killed Isaac. And we're looking at all these instances when one person was dating someone else and circumstances had changed. And, you know, it's so tough to penetrate this and to figure out what exactly was the motivation of any of these acts, whether they actually occurred, and if they did, whether they were as portrayed. And it's just this whole morass where, you know, I mean, what is the takeaway here?
The takeaway is that they were desperate for evidence. And the state's case was thin. It didn't, I mean, its theory of motive is probably the thinnest part because it is so convoluted. And the only way they can make it make sense, the only way they can tie it all together is if they can make Brianne the focus. If Joey's fixation and hatred was so pathological that even when by any standard measure or any standard narrative that there's no longer a motive for Joey to hurt Isaac, he would have done it anyway because he had that much hatred and evilness in him. And they do that in part by showing, in addition to the Checkers incident, a bunch of other incidences that happened, some involving Brianne, some that didn't, some never occurred in the first place, to show the central figure of Joey's life for the 6 months before Isaac's death was his hatred of Isaac for having dated Brianne. And it's probably no secret, I am very skeptical of Brianne's stories. After talking to a lot of people in Rome, in the investigation, and looking at all the records, again, I will not spend a moment defending Joey's behavior because he was a terrible jerk. He was for sure emotionally abusive, but Brianne's stories don't add up. And again, we have her spinning narratives that involve boys fighting over her. This is not just one person saying this. This is a very consistent pattern where Brianne told false stories about Joey harassing her or causing her problems, and then this leading to Joey having trouble with the authorities. During one of Joey's first meetings with the GIP attorneys, he told them a story about something that happened back in 2006 that didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. In fact, the story seemed bizarre enough that no one followed up on it. It wasn't clear what Joey was talking about, and it just didn't seem like a line of investigation worth prioritizing. But then, a couple weeks ago, Claire and I were talking late one night, and she came across some file notes from this early meeting with Joey, and she read them again for the first time in a while. At this point, after seeing again and again how even Joey's otter stories somehow turn out to be true, we were like, that needs to be checked out pronto. So the next time I talked to Joey, I asked him about it. What's this about a trip you took to Troup County?
Oh, you're talking about in 2006 or 7?
Somewhere around there.
I was at Hancock State Prison, and Lieutenant, we called him Crime Dog. He came, they called me to the security office one night, and he was like, "What's going on?" And just kind of talking to him. I'm like, "What's up, Lieutenant?" And he's like, "You got a phone, do you?" I said, "A phone?" So what are you talking about? He said, "You been on the phone tonight?" I said, "Yeah, I just got on the phone with my mom." So he pulls up the little records or whatever, and he sees that I've been on the phone with my mom. He's like, "She do three-way calls for you?" And I was like, "If it's an emergency or something, you know." And he was like, "Have you called this girl, Brianne?" And I'm like, "Called who?" I'm like, "Brianne." He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "No, I ain't called Brianne." Long story short, I ended up getting PI'd for this. I get locked in the hole. They come get me on transfer night. And they're like, "You're transferring." I was like, "Oh, great. Where am I going now?" And the transfer sergeant told me, he said, "You're going to Jackson. You're going to Troup County. You got to go to court." I was like, "Troup County?" He's like, "Yeah." So I ended up going to Jackson that night. And when I get to Jackson, the Troup County Explorer, this older guy, he was like a sheriff's deputy. He was in an Explorer. So he comes and gets me off of the Hancock bus. he asked me, he was like, do you know a Brienne? I told him, I said, yeah, I know a Brienne. And he was like, something about a McDonald's. I supposedly seen her at McDonald's a while back or something, threatening her, this and the other. So he ends up, he tells me that I need to leave her alone, that her husband, he knows her husband, and says they're related or something. I can't remember. And he gets all up in my face, and I get on the van. He calls the DA's office or whatever, and he explains what's going on, and the DA tells him, put him back on the van, send him back to Hancock. This guy's been locked up for so many years, and he was kind of shocked to hear that. So he didn't know I'd been locked up for like 6-7 years at the time. So long story short, I end up getting took back to Jackson and all, and they sent me back to Hancock. But that was all about me supposedly harassing phone calls and something about me being at a McDonald's in Troop County, and I threatened her and her family.
So were you being taken to a court hearing or something?
Yeah, I was actually, I think they were actually going to take me and charge me with this. And when they found out that I was locked up as long as I had been, the DA was like, put his ass back on the bus and get him out of here.
We needed to figure out what this was all about. Small spoiler, I still have no idea what the part of Joey's story involving McDonald's was all about. But for everything else, well, that the GIP was recently able to obtain.
Claire and the Georgia Innocence Project interns started off by sending requests to the Georgia Department of Corrections and the Superior Court in LaGrange, Georgia. In response, the LaGrange court clerk came back and said that there was nothing in the files, case didn't exist, but the Department of Corrections said, well, wait a second, let me take a closer look. And when they did, they found paperwork confirming that Joey had been transferred to Jackson State Prison back in 2006 for arraignment in LaGrange, and a warrant number associated with that production order was also produced. A big shout out to Jason Mitchell of the GDC's Office of Legal Services for tracking down those documents. So it was back to court for two of the Georgia Innocence Project summer interns, Tara and Carson, who trekked out to Troop County where they found a file. And what that file showed was that Brienne had filed charges against Joey in 2006 for terroristic threats. And the file, in fact, had taped interviews with Brienne, and it recorded a couple of the voicemails that she had identified.
It was May 14th, about 10:14, 10:30 on the home phone, and somebody called.
This is a police interview in 2006 with Brienne, who is now married and living in Troop County with her husband. And she's describing a series of harassing and threatening phone calls she'd received one night in May of 2006.
And stated that they, all I could hear was something about an escort, court escort or something like that. And I can remember saying, huh, you know what? And they said, are you an escort? And I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Something
like that. And then the person on the other end said, I'm going to rip your fucking guts out or something like that. And it scared me, so I screamed and called my son. And he picked up the phone and talked to the person on the other end. And with everything going on, I was hysterical because it just scared me. And going through what I had gone through in the past, things like that don't sit well with me. So he got on the phone and was trying to figure out what was going on. And they were trying to say that I was cheating on him or that whoever was on the other line was saying that that they were in the military and that they had gone and I was with them and just a bunch of stuff that didn't make sense and that they were from Rome and then that street from Rome, which is Booger Holler, and just all this stuff that didn't make sense. And then my husband hung up the phone, and then that's when we started letting it pick up on the answer machine.
Brienne's husband hung the phone up and called 911. 10 more calls were received before the police got there, and voicemails were left on both Brienne's home phone and her cell phone. The messages were aggressive and frightening, and also sometimes weepy and hysterical. Here's the very first one.
First saved message sent Sunday, May 14th at 10:08 p.m.
Well, you fucking ass motherfucking bitch. I know you goddamn cheating on me.
when I catch you, I'm gonna goddamn cut your throat. Yeah, you cut. Tell that fuck ass motherfucker you win, I'll be a serious motherfucking bitch ass. Fuck you, bitch, I'm gonna kill you.
End of message.
And here's the second call that was received a few minutes later. Although it's a little hard to understand because the caller is so weepy.
Wait a minute, Melvin. I don't know what you're feeling like that. I ain't never done this wrong to you. I take care of you. You never told me about this. You fucking man, I won't care of you. You don't know what you've done to me. I hate you.
Now, the other calls are much worse quality, so we'll only play a few parts here, but you can hear them in full on our website. Brianne told the deputy who responded to the 911 call that she could not identify the voice or voices on the messages left for her. But she did think that it was someone from Floyd County, because all of her past boyfriends were from there, and she hadn't dated anyone in the Troup County area where she'd moved with her husband. So she assumed whoever it was back in Rome. One of the other clues to the caller's identity, or possible clue, was that during the first call, when the caller had informed Brianne's husband that Brianne had been cheating on him, he told the caller, "Well, if this is the truth, I'll meet you somewhere and you can tell me all about it." And the caller told him that he lived up on Booger Holler in Rome. So with Brianne unable to give any further information on the caller, the police left and they told her to talk to investigators in the morning. Later that night though, at around 2:55 a.m., someone started banging on Brianne's door. She and her husband called the police again, and while the police were there, Brianne checked her cell phone and discovered another message on her phone, this time saying, "I can see you."
Next message sent today at 1:53 a.m. I'll see you. End of message. To delete this message, resave.
The next day, Brianne and her husband met with investigators. This time, Brianne informed them that her ex-boyfriend Joey Watkins was behind all the phone calls. He was, Brianne said, retaliating against her for testifying against him at his murder trial. Brianne was adamant. The caller was Joey, she said. She could identify it beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, you mentioned something about him trying to disguise his voice.
Just try to talk lower, try to talk like he was black. But like I said, once he said that, I knew. And then there was also he called my cell phone first before he ever started calling the home phone. We found that out later. And about the third call into my cell phone record, my cell phone voicemail, the second call to my cell phone, he was trying to talk different. And then that third call, he messed up, and it sounds just like it. I mean, it's him, without a shadow of a doubt.
Are you familiar with Booger Holler?
Yeah, I mean, I know where it's at, but I don't. The only connection that I can make is his girlfriend. Him lived on that road at one time. But that's the only connection that I can make.
And just to clarify, you say his girlfriend. Who is he?
Joey Watkins.
I just don't believe Brianne could have thought this was true, though. Because those voicemails, that is not Joey's voice. I've talked to him enough now where it didn't even cross my mind it could have been him when I listened. And Claire had the same reaction.
But even if you can't tell just from the voice alone that it wasn't Joey, you can tell it's not him from the content of the messages, and Brianne's statements about them all show that.
Based on the report by the investigator with the Troup County DA's office, it's clear he doesn't believe Brianne either, because in his report, he highlights a number of inconsistencies in her story, stressing in bold text that he asked Brianne why she didn't know who the caller was at the time the police were there, but then later claims to have instantly and immediately known it was Joey. And after claiming that the officer might have made a mistake, Brianne in fact confirmed that she did tell the officer initially that she did not know the caller. And even aside from that, the claim that the calls were from Joey just really doesn't make any sense. Probably the most significant fact here is the calls all seem to be connected to the person who banged on the door at 2:55 a.m. after leaving the creepy message, "I see you." Well, Joey, as we all know, was in prison since 2001, Hancock State Prison, so there's no way he could have been the one banging on the door. Also, if you recall from listening earlier, in one of the calls, the caller clearly makes a reference to being at a barbecue with Brianne. And when Brianne was asked about it, Brianne claims the barbecue reference was either a mistake, possibly due to the fact that Joey's ex, Aslan, had a father who owned a barbecue establishment. So, I don't know, you try to add that up and see how it makes sense. It seems pretty clear that someone recently was at a barbecue with Brianne, and yet obviously that wouldn't be Joey, who had been incarcerated for 5 years.
Also, Aslan's dad didn't own a barbecue establishment, so there's that. And then there's this call.
"You lied to me for a year, fucking straight. The whole time I was over in goddamn Korea, until I came back home. I can't goddamn believe you. I cannot believe you.
You've been lying to me for a year, fucking straight. The whole time I was over in goddamn Korea." Why would Joey claim something like that? I mean, he was in prison, not Korea. Even aside from that, why would Joey be calling for prison to say, "You were lying to me for a year straight"? Anyway, Brianne told investigators that this was just Joey trying to make her husband jealous. Yeah, no, I'm not buying that.
So probably due to the investigator not believing Brianne, the criminal charge of terroristic threats against Joey was dropped. But that news apparently was not communicated to the sheriff's office, who then mistakenly transported Joey from Hancock Prison following the earlier paperwork. Now remember how earlier when Joey described how the deputy spoke to the DA and the DA told the deputy to take Joey back? Well, my guess is it had nothing to do with the deputy learning that Joey had been imprisoned. It was because the charges against him had been dropped. But even though the charges against Joey and LaGrange were dropped, they remained on Joey's record. And Brianne thereafter filed them with the parole board. And by Brianne refiling these charges with the parole board, in Joey's record, when he is being considered for parole, there is this allegation that he made these horrifying and threatening phone calls against her. And in fact, it was just sort of fortuitous that Claire was able to find this out in the GIP interns, because in Georgia, submissions made to an inmate's parole file are considered state secrets. They're classified. And again, Joey was under the impression that the charges against him were dropped for entirely separate reasons, not even knowing about the Brianne allegations. And what that means is, but for this investigation into the weeds of all this taking place, in perpetuity, on Joey's record, anytime he was up for parole, there would be these allegations that Brianne made, that Joey said, "I can see you," and made these threatening phone calls, despite the fact it's clear from both those circumstances and the content of those messages that there's really no way that Joey could have made these phone calls.
Basically, if there hadn't been a mistake somewhere along the line, and there hadn't been a production order from Hancock to Jackson, where he's being transported for the hearing that was no longer going to happen, Joey would never have known about it, and he couldn't have told us about it, and we would never have been able to figure out what had happened here. And like Colin said, this would have remained on his file for the parole board to consider. So now he'd have had secret, unchallenged, apparently inaccurate, and highly inflammatory and accusatory information in his file at Brianne's request, and would be used against him forevermore in an attempt to keep him locked up even longer. Claire told Joey about what they found last week. I apologize for this terrible sound quality, but I wanted to share Joey's reaction with you anyway. Here's what he said after learning what Brianne had done with his profile and with the charges in Troup County.
"You know, I'm not gonna lie, see, it's hard not to get pissed off about stuff like that. I mean, I'm already here for something I didn't do, and she knows this, you know, and she probably knows I can't stand her. Oh, man. Jesus. I just want to know when it's gonna stop."
"We've got some other news in your case.
before you tell me this, I want to promise you something now. I'm telling you the truth, and you can, like I said, you can do anything you want to. Give it to Susan, give it to whoever, I don't care. I have not contacted that girl. I hate the girl she walks on. I don't want anything to do with her. I pray to God I never see her face again. I'm sorry, that's how I feel. I can't believe she's doing this. Are you serious? Contacted the parole board, telling them that I'm calling you? Are you serious? Just leave me alone. I just want to be left alone. That is crazy.
So we began where the police did, by looking at Joey's alleged motive. And you can probably tell how we feel about it from our discussion and analysis. But this relationship became the launching point of the investigation, and the state remained bound to this theory, doubling down all the way through trial. And you know what? It worked. They won their conviction. If you can't figure out how the state was able to get a first-degree murder conviction when they couldn't even settle on a theory of the crime, or when Joey's co-defendant, Mark Free, who they said did the actual shooting, was acquitted, we'll show you how over the course of this whole season. Going forward, we'll start diving deep into every part of the investigation and every person connected to it, and we'll show you where things went wrong. Next time on Undisclosed.
I guess just to wrap it up, you know, if I don't see you again, just, you know, in the whole conclusion of everything, I think Joey's a great person. You know, this is coming from somebody who once hated him. Whenever, whatever, we can fight. But Joey and I turned out to be a really good pair. We had a great friendship. I guess I relate to him a lot then and, you know, now because I've been where he's at. Not for near as long, but, I would stand on his behalf any day to say, you know, that I don't believe he did it. If I did, I wouldn't have met with you. Do I think they'll ever find who really did it? I don't know. Do I hope one day that Joey will get the opportunity to come home? I do. I think he deserves it, and I hope, you know, I hope that day comes soon.
Scratch, listen to Undisclosed Episode 3 off of your podcast listen list. Thanks, as always, to the Georgia Innocence Project. You can check them out at www.georgiainnocenceproject.org. Our sponsor for this week was Stamps.com. They've supported us for more than a year now. Wow. Anyway, we're incredibly grateful to Stamps.com. We'd be even more grateful if you went and signed up for their services using promo code Undisclosed. You'll be glad you did because you'll save time and money on postage. Ramiro Marquez and Patrick Cortez did the theme music. Baluki expertly crafted the logo, and Nina Mooser and Christy Williams run our website at www.undisclosed-podcast.com. New People Maps, available there, designed by Heidi Phelps. Rebecca Lavoy of Partners in Crime Media and the podcast Crime Writers On is our producer. Hannah McCarthy and Brooke Giddings, associate produce. Don't forget to check out Brooke's podcast, Actual Innocence. We love it, and we know you will, too. Methil Telham produces. Not sound per se, but she produces pretty much everything else, so thanks, Methil. The Undisclosed Instagram account is popping off thanks to Methil. You can find us there using our handle, UndisclosedPod, as well as Twitter and Facebook. Help us drive the discussion using hashtag Undisclosed and send your questions about the episode to John over at the Undisclosed Addendum using hashtag UDAddendum. Undisclosed's executive producer is Dennis Robinson, and he looks forward to your company next week for episode 4. Until then...